Financial Planners Explained. Do you need a financial advisor?
Welcome to the Frugal Friends Podcast, where you'll learn to save money, embrace simplicity, and live a richer life. Here are your hosts, Jen and Jill.
For a very long time, I thought financial advisors were a scam. Why would you pay someone for something you could do yourself? But after 10 years of studying finance, we have realized that the reality is somewhere in the middle.
If you've ever wondered whether hiring a financial advisor is worth it or if it's a trap, this episode is for you. We are going to be breaking down exactly what financial planners do, how to know if you need one, and how to find someone who actually works for you, even on a frugal budget.
Welcome, frugal friends. My name is Jen.
My name's Jill.
And my first experience with a financial advisor was a stereotypical negative one. Mm. We had just finished paying off $78,000 of debt, and we were told you can't start investing until you pay off all of your debt. And so we just assumed that now that we're ready to start investing, we need to hire somebody to do it for us. Mm-hmm. And we went into that meeting, and the guy had four options for us. It was a free meeting. He had a guy with him, and it just felt very salesy. And I got the weird vibe from it. And so I went online, as millennials do, and I looked for podcasts. I had only been, this was 2017, 2016, and I had only been studying finance for a year. So I didn't know
anything. What prompted you to go to him?
Well, just because we were done paying off our debt and we were ready for the next thing. Uh-huh. So that right there is how I got into personal finance podcasts, personal finance blogs, and personal finance media in general. It was from that. So it was a blessing, but that is where I learned that this guy was indeed selling me something, that he had some licenses, but his licenses did not require to work in my best interest, and that there were so many more options that were so much more affordable. Mm-hmm. And so that I took from that experience, that financial advisors are a scam. I can do this myself. I spent years like stacking Benjamins, Afford Anything, Choose FI, oh my gosh, Bigger Pockets. Like, I was in podcasts like every day. Mm-hmm. And I just learned everything I could about investing. Mm-hmm. And I was like, why would you pay someone to do something you could do yourself? And that's what I would say. And over the last 10 years of that, I guess it's been 8 years since that experience, I have learned a lot of instances where a financial advisor would be useful, but not that financial advisor, quote unquote, that I met with the first time I ever thought about investing.
Yeah. I think because you've always been a few steps ahead of me in your understanding of finances, me knowing I don't actually have to go to somebody. I could learn how to do this on my own. And it's actually not that complicated, or doesn't have to be that complicated, has caused me to never have sought out a financial advisor until recently. I mean, a lot of you know that I just recently sold my house. And so there was this influx of cash that I needed to decide, okay, what is the best route to take with this? And just to be affirmed by somebody else. Thankfully, I've got a couple of friends who are financial advisors and do work in my best interest because they're friends of mine. but for that reason, I also know that there are really quality financial advisors out there, and realizing there are reasons that we might seek out a financial advisor even as frugal people. So I'm excited to kind of lay the framework for when might you want to and when can you do it on your own.
Yeah. And so that's hopefully what we are going to help you with today. So first, let's set the groundwork for, because there are a lot of different people that fall under one term of financial advisor. So for us, We are defining a financial advisor as a licensed professional who helps people manage and make decisions about their money. They help with basics like saving, debt payoff, budgeting. But where they really shine is guiding decisions about investing, insurance, taxes, college funding, and retirement savings, especially retirement withdrawals. So, like I said, this term a lot of people can fall under this term. And that was the guy that I saw first. He was a financial advisor. He had his, you know, different tests to be able to be considered a financial advisor to sell securities in the state of Florida.
And I think that's what can be so confusing is so many people can use this financial advisor designation, you know, anything from managers to insurance agents to certified financial planners. And so it's one of the reasons why we need to have the correct questions to ask. And actually, we just sent out in the friend letter today, 6 questions to be asking of a financial advisor to make sure you're getting somebody who is going to work in your best interest and is best suited for the needs that you currently have. So if you're not subscribed to that, certainly check the description to get the, it's a free newsletter.
Yeah, and if you're listening, it's frugalfriendspodcast.com. It's right there. Sign up because we send, you know, extra stuff like this all the time in our twice weekly newsletter.
So here's some of the circumstances in which we think you should consider a financial advisor. Let's say you've been listening to the Frugal Friends podcast for a while, or maybe even other podcasts, but you're still feeling uncertain about your money. You're still having trouble connecting the dots between, okay, here's the money I make and how exactly do I budget? And am I certain that I'm invested in the things that I should be investing in? It could be worth seeking out somebody just to do a holistic view of your finances to either affirm, yeah, you're on the right track, or to say, here's some shifts that you could make based on the goals that you've described mm-hmm. and what you're currently doing.
Yeah. Ultimately, you don't know what you don't know. And I think that is, again, where financial advisors kind of shine. Because when I was a couple years into studying personal finance, there were a ton of things I didn't know, but I didn't know that. And there's still like things that I don't know, but I don't know what I don't know. And so that is a big reason, like whether you meet these qualifications or not, if you are just anxious about what you don't know and you're consuming a lot of personal finance content, then this could be a good move for you regardless. But specific things that could be good is like you came into some money. Like you sold your house or you won the lottery or you got an insurance settlement.
An inheritance. Some windfall of some sort.
Some taxes back that is significant, like more than you have ever gotten before. Or when you need like a coordinated long-term plan for reaching multiple financial goals. So debt payoff, real estate, insurance, tax, college funding, retirement. You want to make sure that all those goals are cohesive. A financial planner, a financial advisor can be really good for that. You just want to make sure that you're going to someone who can give you a holistic plan. It isn't just for investments or just for insurance or taxes or whatever.
We also recommend seeking out a financial planner if you are close to retirement. And I would say somewhere between 5 to 10 years out so that you can optimize your income sources, understand how you're going to approach withdrawals from the investments that you have, make sure that there's not any changes that need to be made to your current situation. So there are circumstances where we are going to say, unless you feel really confident about what you're doing and how you're doing it, seek someone out. And it doesn't have to mean this long-term relationship. It can just mean you are consulting them and you're paying them a fee for it.
Yeah. You can, there's a lot of advisors where you can pay for a holistic plan, or alternatively, you can pay to ask them about one part of your finances. But ultimately, if your finances are very simple, you've got steady job, manageable debt, simple savings goals, you may not need a full service advisor yet. You can hire a fee-only financial planner for one-time hourly, you know, questions, which is much less expensive. You can get that for, you know, $150 to $300 for a session. Or if you're, I would say also, if you're a higher income earner, then definitely, because taxes are going to be really important to you and you're going to want more than just an accountant. You're going to want somebody who knows about all the areas of finance to, again, make sure that's cohesive. Or if you have investable assets, at least of $100,000, but I would say closer to like $250,000, $300,000. That's when you should really consider like hiring someone to look at everything to make sure you're on the right track. Mm-hmm. But if your invested assets are less than $100,000, everything's very simple. You probably don't need to. And I'm sure there are people in the comments that will come at me and disagree. Mm-hmm. But it's not cheap to find a good financial advisor. They're worth their weight in gold, but you have to weigh like the perfect scenario versus the realistic scenario. Mm-hmm.
And your own ability and acumen to understand these concepts. If it's just not clicking, finding a good financial advisor really can help to save you time and stress, allow you to focus on the things that are more important to you, prevent some of the costly mistakes that really can happen, like me forgetting to actually invest the money that was sitting in my Roth IRA. They could potentially help you to improve your returns, just give you peace of mind. But here's the thing, they can get a bad rap.
Yeah.
There is a reason that sometimes we have this, what financial advisor, I don't know about you.
Yeah. So many of them are essentially glorified salespeople. And there are a few reasons. There are a lot of reasons they get a bad rap, but we'll just cover the two main ones. So the first one is fees. And this is the reason that initial sales guy tipped me off, because they legally have to disclose all the fees to you, right? And there were quite a bit. So many people have no idea how much they are paying to use their free financial advisor, who they pay like assets under management or like 1% of every contribution they make to their, you know, IRA or 401k or taxable brokerage goes to their financial advisor. And they think they're just paying them, you know, to invest for them. 1% is not a lot if you're doing $100, right? But once you get to that like $100,000 mark, those dollars add up. They accumulate and they take away from the compoundable assets that you have overall. So doing the math, you could potentially be paying your advisor over $100,000 to manage assets that they're not really doing much with. So traditional advisors do typically charge 1% of assets under management, and you will see that as AUM a lot of places, and that can quietly add up. So once you get up to $500,000, you will pay $5,000 a year for your financial advisor. And whether that advisor spends 10 hours or 100 hours on your account. And so they earn other commissions from selling things. So the guy that I saw at first, he only had 4 options, right? Because he was bound to only sell the funds from the company he worked for, whether they were going to be expensive to me or not. And so those investing in funds has another fee. They all have fees. So that was going to be another 1% off the top. And then there was a front end load fee for the effort it takes to make the automatic transaction, right? So you've got front end load, and sometimes you've got back end load. And it's not the back end load you want, right?
To have it on the front end and the back end in not a good way.
It's not a blessing.
We don't need that.
It's not. These loads are not blessings.
Oh, wow. We need to move on. Yeah.
But okay. So there's also surrender charges. And my favorite fee Can you have the favorite fee?
And this one is actually like very wild.
The 12B1 fee.
Tell us what it is.
Let me know in the comments if you feel as angered about this fee as I do. It is a marketing and distribution fee that advisors are legally able to charge you for the marketing of the fund to other people. So the fund that they have you invested in, they want to sell that to other people. So they make front-end loads and back-end loads off more people. And they are going to market that on your dime. They're not paying for that marketing. That's the 12B1 fee. So it's named after the SEC rule 12B-1 that allows mutual fund advertising paid for by shareholders. So if you have $100,000 invested in a fund with a 0.75% 12B1 fee, you are paying $750 per year just for that fund's marketing and distribution. So free financial advisors that take a, you know, a commission off of everything you invest are the most expensive advisors.
Mm. Okay, so the second reason that we believe that advisors get a bad rap is that they are only legally required to offer suitable products and not necessarily the best products for you. And I think that's where we could find ourselves in situations where they are not optimized for us building wealth. It's more so optimized for the financial planner to be making money off of you. So that means that a broker or an insurance agent could legally recommend a suitable product that pays them more commission, even if a better, less expensive option actually exists. So obviously that could hurt you in the long run. That could be costly for you in the long run. And some of the big firms even incentivize their employees to push proprietary funds or products. So they've got this weight and pressure on them to be selling these products to you and not be offering you these other alternatives. So even if they want to be a good person, the people that they're working for are telling them, no, 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 you must sell them this thing.
Yeah.
So and if you're going to them because I don't understand what I don't understand, I'm putting my trust and reliance in you to help me understand these things, and they're kind of being shady about it, that really sucks.
Yeah. And so the guy we saw was actually a friend of ours working for a company like this,
where that's why the dude in the room was there, like breathing down his neck.
So they only had these few proprietary options. They couldn't offer other options. This happens a lot with insurance too. If you're going to an insurance company where they only offer one thing, versus you could go to an insurance broker who has upwards of 15, 20 different options to shop for you, you know you're going to be getting the best deal. Or you can go to like a site like Policy Genius, where they will compare insurance rates. And so you always have to be comparing the fees, the rates, and somebody who is working in your best interest, you know that they are doing that for you. But somebody who you don't know is working in your best interest, you're not sure if they're just offering you something suitable. So how do you find somebody working in your best interest? It is actually very easy. It is getting easier by the year to figure that out.
Phew!
Right? Technology has done a lot of shady things for us, but it's also done a lot of good things. So thank you, internet. So the number one thing that you can look for when you're looking for a good advisor is looking for a fiduciary. Fiduciary. Put that in there. See what happens. A fiduciary.
You just want a wand.
I
you
do.
You want to have a wand.
I want a wand. I want a wand. Just now.
Remember that word, fiduciary.
Fiduciary.
We are
your, say it with me.
Your queen mothers. What's the word?
Queen mother.
Who's the one in Cinderella?
I don't know.
Fairy godmother.
Fairy godmother.
Fairy godmother.
Yes. Say it with me. Fiduciary.
Fairy godmother.
Okay. And so a fiduciary is legally required to act in your best interest, not just offer suitable products, legally needs to offer the best products in the ecosystem that they have access to for you. So in their knowledge base, in whatever they have access to, that's why it's good to go to somebody that has access to a lot of things, right? They are working in your best interest. And if they do not, they will lose the designation that they've worked so hard for.
How do you know if someone's a fiduciary? Ask them.
Ask.
Are you a fiduciary?
And it is such a buzzword. You specifically have to ask, are you a fiduciary and will you put it in writing? Because that's going to get them. They have to put it in writing. That's makes it legal. Because a lot of firms will say we have a fiduciary standard, or they will just use the word because they know you're looking for it, even if it's not like, it's just an idea to them. It's mm-hmm. not like a legal obligation.
Yeah. So often brokers, insurance agents, bankers who are advisors are not actually fiduciaries. People with certain designations, though, so like your fee-only planners, CFPs, they are.
They're almost always planners. Mm-hmm. Yes.
They have to sign a whole thing, understand an entire document of a code of ethics.
A 60-page code of ethics document. That actually Jill's friend memorized.
Shout out to Dave Ball. He is the most intelligent human I know.
Dave, what?
Yeah, what?
Wow. Okay. So that makes it a lot easier to find a fiduciary, is that you're going to look for some specific designations like CFP, Certified Financial Planner.
I think that's what makes it really easy, like you said, now to find people that you can know that you trust. It's one of the things that I recommended even in the mental health world. And someone's like, who should I go to see? Look for the licensing, because you can know that they've had to pass a certain set of standards. You know, stay away from just the word mental health coach, but look for a licensed clinical social worker. Mm-hmm. Look for a licensed marriage and family therapist. Same thing here. Look for a certified financial planner. That they're going to have a comprehensive financial planning understanding. So kind of knowing general knowledge on investing, taxes, retirement, estate planning, insurances. So if that's the type of thing that you need advice on, kind of anything and everything, that's what you're going to want. A CPA is going to be more tax-oriented financial planning. So if you are more focused on optimizing for taxes, kind of really needing to know, what am I going to pay in taxes on this? What do I need to be worried about with capital gains here, there, somewhere else? If you need deep tax expertise, that's who you can go to. If you are more so needing assistance on budgeting or debt management, then an AFC, so that's an accredited financial counselor, might be something that you'd want to look for. So great for some of that more behavioral financial wellness perspective.
This is financial coaching. There are so many financial coaches out there that do not have any designation. You cannot verify what they know about personal finance. Experience is great. Having done it is great. Like, we paid off $78,000 of debt. You paid off
60
something thousand. Why do we both always forget?
I know. Yeah. I gotta just black out.
Okay, so we have the experience, but it is a sliver of knowledge in the greater ecosystem of experience. And so education, testing, that ensures that the person you're going to has studied experience outside of their own. So there's no shade to money coaches or financial coaches, but don't you dare hire one that does not have some kind of like credential.
And let them manage your finances.
Yeah, some kind of registered trademark credential, not just some course, some guy getting rich off of selling courses to people creating courses that created a certification.
And this is my hot take. I only want a coach to teach me how to play sports. In any other sector of life, I need credentials. That's just my stance. If you just slap, because here's the thing, anybody can slap the word coach onto something. Uh-huh. There's no reporting body. There's no accountability. There's no ongoing monitoring when you just put the word coach on something. Mm-hmm. They are not reportable to anybody. And that's worrisome for
me. And the craziest thing is even shady advisors have to take like a Series 7, a Series 6, Series 65, Series 66. They have to take tests, even if they're shady. So like they, you at least know more than these coaches that have nothing.
Yeah.
So yeah. take that.
I want there to be a board, and you need to report to this board.
Yeah.
And that's that when it comes to my mental health and my money. Okay.
I want there to be some kind of ethics committee that if you screw up, you're going to lose your credentials. And I think besides the CFP, the other hardest one that I've heard to get is the CFA, Chartered Financial Analyst, and that is investment management. So like that is like, if you've got a very complex investment portfolio, finding a CFA is for that. But otherwise, a CFP is fine. A lot of these people will have multiple designations. Like you can find a lot of CFPs with the EA designation, and that's I can't even remember, but that's EA is enrolled agent by the IRS. So they have a little bit more tax knowledge. So maybe you're a small business and you have some complex tax questions. Finding a CFP who's also either a CPA or an EA would be a good combo for you. So you can mix and match too. But every CFP is going to have some kind of tax knowledge. You can rest assured on that.
And all of these that we just listed off, CFP, CPA, AFC, CFA, they all require education. They all have a code of ethics that they need to adhere to, or their licensing and accreditation is revoked, and require continuing education.
Yes.
So they need to be staying current and up on what's most relevant. And all of those things are just going to serve you better. Mm-hmm. So the third thing that we would recommend you know in finding a good financial planner is how they're paid. So yeah, they've got a fiduciary responsibility to you. Yes, they have their credentials. But even then, there could be various fee structures that are more or less advantageous to you. So the model that we certainly love the most is the fee only. So that means that they are only charging you a flat rate hourly, or they could be doing a percent of assets, but no commissions. So this has the lowest conflict between the possibility of them working in your best interest or their own best interest. That it's very straightforward how you're paying them. I think, you know, there's a lot of opportunity here to just pay for consultation. They're not handing over all of your investments to them, and they're not doing it for you. They may be advising you on what to be investing in, telling you the different paths that you need to take, but that's it. Mm-hmm. And that's where it ends. And so that, I think, that's my personal choice when it comes to financial planners.
Yeah. But you can find fee-only planners who will manage your assets for you, again, with an assets under management fee, but it's only paid by you. There's no 12B1 or front loads or back loads, none of that. But yeah, personally, again, we are confident that you can do your own investing if you have guidance. So unless you really don't want to be a part of your investing, I really think just like a flat fee, you pay a bigger fee up front for the holistic plan and then a lower fee annually to reevaluate everything or reevaluate things when big life changes happen, like a job loss or a baby or whatever. Fee only really is our best choice by far. You also have fee-based. And so you can find certified financial planners, CFPs, that are both fee-only and fee-based. And the fee-based will have a mix of commissions within them, but they no longer can say they're fee-only if they take some commissions. They have to say they're fee-based. And that's where things get a little murky. I think you see a lot of this from insurance people coming in and getting certified with their CFP, and they retain from, you know, their life before some of those commissions. I think that's where you see it. But just be aware that fee-only and fee-based are different, and we prefer fee-only.
Yeah, that there could be possible conflicts. I mean, still, the fiduciary responsibility still bears weight on this.
Right, whether they're fee-based or only.
Right, yes. So it is possible that they might recommend something that would be a great option for you and they're earning commissions, but just recognize there could be some conflict there.
Yeah.
And finally, commission only could potentially be a way that they are paid, and that is paid by product sales, whether that's insurance or funds that they recommend that you be investing in. And that's, there's high conflicts there.
That's the red flag. So you want to ask, can you outline every way you're compensated and who pays you? And if they hesitate or can't give a clear answer in plain English, that is a red flag. That they are getting commissions from somewhere. It should be a very easy, like, I get paid by you, and that's it. So there are places where you can find these, fiduciary CFPs, really quality advisors online. The first one is the National Association of Personal Financial Advisors, NAPFA. org. And then XY Planning Network. And so they specialize in Gen X and Y clients and flat fee or subscription models. Both flat fee and subscription are fee only. But these are where independent financial advisors will join these, usually both of these organizations typically, and just be on the resource. So you can go on the website and be like, I'm looking for a financial advisor that maybe specializes in this or is located here. And then they'll come back with a list that you can interview. And it's kind of like finding a therapist. Like the first one that you check out or you talk to on the phone may not feel like the right vibe. Mm-hmm. So you should talk to several. Mm-hmm. You should talk to several and see which one gives you the best vibe.
Yeah. You don't want to feel talked down to.
No.
You don't want to feel pulled around. You don't want to feel you don't want to feel more confused after leaving their office. Like, it should be someone truly where you feel like they are working in your best interest. And that is clear both in word and deed. And it's possible with some of these resources.
Yeah.
Find that.
And again, frugalfriendspodcast.com. Get on the friend letter. If you're already on the friend letter, you'll see it in your inbox. The 6 questions to ask to make sure the vibe is right. Mm.
You know what is always in my best interest?
Oh, fiduciary standard from day one, standing on business.
The bill of the week.
It's time for the best minute of your entire week. Maybe a baby was born and his name is William. Maybe you paid off your mortgage. Maybe your car died and you're happy to not have to pay that bill anymore. Duck bills, buffalo bills, Bill Clinton. This is the Bill of the Week.
Hi, Jen and Jill. First time Bill of the Week submission, so I'm excited about this one. I just bought a new bidet for $10. And it happened because I was able to get a $141 check from Rakuten. And as I purchased the bidet, I checked the Honey browser extension, where I saved myself an additional $15. So I'm staring at a bill for this bidet for $151, knowing that it only actually cost me $10. So thanks for all of your encouragement and sharing about extensions like Rakuten and Honey, because I just got paid to shop and then I only spent $10 to buy something worth $150. So I am enjoying all of these new purchases.
I wish that we made merch, because Tonsillectomy Girl Summer would be a shirt that we would sell.
Yeah, that definitely at least Mary would buy. I don't know if anybody else would, but I think it
would just be great to just wear without context for anybody. Tonsillectomy Girl Summer. And how few people would talk to you. Like, if you just... remember when I lost my voice and somebody from my past came up and talked to me? If I had been wearing a tonsillectomy girl summer shirt,
they would have understood.
Yeah.
View her from afar.
Though I think we should be talking to each other more, but in the off chance that you have lost your voice or your tonsils.
I love this, though. What a good, I mean, yeah, I hope that you recover well and have enjoyed your summer. Summer's over. But
all your electrolytes, Mary. I am carb loading and electrolyte loading as we speak.
Yeah.
For my race on Sunday.
I think it is good to do a review and cancel these subscriptions, right? Don't be paying for stuff
you don't need. For sure. Yeah.
But remember, if you have unused rewards, there's probably plenty of these types of subscriptions where I got points, I could cash in for something. Do that.
Do it.
Absolutely. Leave nothing on the table.
Leave no reward unturned.
This is so true. Well, if you all listening have a bill that you want to submit, if it has to do with tonsillectomy girl summer or a bill November or just... you have something that you want to say to us and you're going to try to find some way to connect it to the word bill.
Please do.
We are here it. FrugalFriendsPodcast.com/bill. Also the link in the description. And now it's time for the lightning round. Pew, pew, pew.
And this one's for us, but it's also for you at home. So wait for it. Jill.
Ow, okay.
Jill, what do you think about becoming a certified financial planner?
Oh, Jen, this is not the day to ask me that. I think it might not happen. Jen and I are both taking courses to become CFPs, to be that very thing we tell you that you should be looking for. Mm-hmm. Certified financial planner, fee only structure, fiduciary responsibility. We believe in it so much that we're like, why don't we do it?
Yeah. And thinking that it's time, even in our content creation, like Frugal Friends isn't going anywhere, but AI has made influencers a dime a dozen. And you cannot be sure if the person giving their experience is just spouting regurgitated information that they do not know is wrong. Just like, you know, what I was experiencing in the early days of my writing. Like, thankfully, I had editors and I had oversight, but not everybody has that now. And so we think it's going to become more and more important for you to get your financial education and information from credentialed individuals, people who have taken classes, who are bound to a board of ethics and are taking continuing education and are bound to a fiduciary duty. Mm-hmm. We think that's going to become non-negotiable in the future.
So it's what we're doing. I'm a little kicking and screaming and it feels like drinking from a fire hose.
We are in school. Like, we started school. We're back in school because we have to take 7 college classes and then sit for a 6-hour exam and verify with the CFP board that we have 6,000 hours of experience in the personal finance world, which we do after, you know, writing about it, publishing a book, doing this for 8 years. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot. And a background check.
Oh, I forgot about that.
That's at the end.
Dang.
They make you do the work. Right. They make you do all the work and then they give you the background check.
Good luck. Wow. Okay, how are you feeling about it? Or it's not how you're feeling. What do you think about it?
Well, I'm super passionate.
What are you thinking and how are you feeling?
I am excited to get to work with people in a deeper way. Mm. Frugal Friends allows us to offer education in a wide way, in a wide area. But having relationships in like face-to-face relationships is becoming more and more important to me. Mm-hmm. And I am becoming more and more disillusioned with influencing and influencers in general. Not the people, but like the career.
Yeah.
And And I'm really looking forward to offering this.
Yeah.
We make our money off of advertising, right? Which feels kind of like we advertise and we speak for things that we really believe in.
Yeah.
But it makes it limited.
Yeah.
And so this is also a way that we can ensure that we can do this for the long term and can turn down, keep turning down those ads that don't align with us and still be able to feed our families.
So much.
Yeah.
When people, they're constantly coming to us. What about this? What about this? What about this? We're just like, no.
It's not like we're popular. But like,
I mean, we're turning down a lot though.
It's the products that you see everywhere on social media, right? And you know what I'm talking about. And we're just like, no, like, not it.
We can't.
Yeah. So
we can't in good conscience tell you to buy a $30 household cleaning product.
So yeah, I am keeping up. I'm in the insurance class right now. And
you're whipping through it faster than I am.
I have no social life. So I sit in bed every night and I read the class and you go out and do
that's
living.
My bad.
And you're living life. Yeah. And that's your problem. Yeah. I don't do anything. But I am very, very excited about it. And so it'll be either, you know, July or November of next year is when it will happen. But here's your turn in the lightning round. What do you think about it? What do you think?
What do you think about what?
About us becoming certified
angel planners. Oh, about us doing it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And let us know in the comments what you think. And if it's mean, don't put it in the comments. Just don't say it in general.
Send it to howtomoney.com.
If you don't like it, we're Joel and Matt. They don't even know that we tell this joke, honestly.
They're about to find out when they get the email. Jill should not become a CFP. What? Okay.
Yeah. Let us know.
Wow.
And thank you for listening. I hope this episode illuminated, shed some light on this topic of financial planning in general, and was a sweet way to break the news to you that this is something that we are interested in and passionate about. And if you enjoyed it, please subscribe to the YouTube channel, hit the like button, hit the subscribe button, and slam that like button, slam that subscribe button.
Pound it. Front load that thing.
And if you've read our book, Buy What You Love Without Going Broke, we would
backload the reviews.
We would so love a review on Amazon. You don't have to have purchased it from there, but it is where most people go for their reviews. Like Kyle did, left a review on Amazon, 5 stars. I've been listening to the dynamic duo behind the Frugal Friends podcast for years now, cultivating good financial habits based on their approach of values-based spending. So when they decided to release a book, I clearly did not hesitate to read this book. And boy, is it a fantastic read. Reorienting yourself away from the values of what others define to be a successful life and to what makes you happy, fulfilled, and successful is the bedrock of many chapters here. This is financial advice that isn't steeped in some arbitrary rules developed by a financial coach, but is guidance that forces you to look into your own values and assesses what matters to you. This book is a must read. It will change how you view money on your own terms.
Amazing. Thank you, Kyle. If you feel similarly about our book, about our podcast, about our YouTube channel, you know what to do. Just do the thing. It's free. We're going to love you for it. We are responding to all of your comments on YouTube as well.
Yes.
So
leave something unhinged. And those are my favorite ones.
They are fun. We do see you and we get it, obviously, because we're same. So if you leave something unhinged on a level that we're going to get, we're gonna love it and respond back.
We're going to be unhinged back. Yeah. And so we'll see you in the comments.
And we'll see you next time.
Frugal Friends is produced by Eric Sirianni.
Okay, so you remember my $94 shampoo?
couldn't forget.
Actually, I know.
Actually, I do think about your expensive shampoo like pretty much every time I'm in the shower.
Wow.
And no, anytime I shampoo my hair, which is not every time I'm in the shower, I'm like, dang, Jen's shampoo is expensive.
Yeah. Well, I went back and it was $84.
Oh.
And Amazon does not have a price like
match
forgiveness or anything. So what I did was that I bought the shampoo, returned the $94 one because it's still in the return window. And when this $84 shampoo gets in today, I'm just going to return it like it was the $94 one.
Mm-hmm. That my mom played that game all the time. I don't know like exactly how ethical it is.
Well, you know what? They should just be offering price match.
I know. If it's within that return window, yeah. Then yes.
It would be a lot better for the environment.
Did you consider reaching out to them and saying that?
No.
Because I feel like they probably would if you were to have like reached out and been like, I'm within this window. Will you?
That's smart.
Spot me. Because now it's a lot of work on your end.
I'm just going to run it to the UPS store.
But yeah, that was my mom's classic. I think she kind of viewed it as a side hustle. It was just like finding things for less, returning the more expensive one. Like back, we were constantly returning stuff.
Wow. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. These girls that I was sitting next to talking about yesterday at the coffee shop, talking about all the things they were buying. One of them was justifying like everything, but like, oh, like I can just return it. Oh, they have a great return policy. Oh, buy it and just return it. And if you don't like it, returning was her justification for literally 2.5 hours of talking about things that she had bought, that she wanted to buy, or that her friend with her should buy.
I mean, I love it as a last resort when I regret a purchase. Like, right. I love that I can return it, but it is not my MO in making the purchases.
Right. Well, I do not want to return.
No, something. I hate returning stuff.
And this was a situation where I was like, okay, $10 is worth it for me to just drive up the street to the UPS store.
Yeah.
It's not out of my way. Oh, yeah. So you can say that it's $84 shampoo now.
Well done.